Hey guys, Josh Henkin here, creator of the DVRT system and Ultimate Sandbag. And I thought I would do a little video vlog today rather than write everything out, because this is a topic that obviously could be many different blog posts, which is some of the common mistakes people make in low back pain when they're working with clients. And I thought it was also prudent because it's something I can talk a lot about, because I've suffered a spinal disease since I was 14 years old. While a lot of people see the surgeries and procedures I go through now, more recently, if you've been following me, I just went through, unfortunately, another spinal fusion just 2 weeks ago, is that they think it's something I did wrong in my workouts, or that maybe it was a specific injury I had, I did something wrong. And I'm kind of a unique case because it is a disease. So it'd be just no different than any other disease that someone is kind of born with and is degenerative and accelerates over time. I had big problems when I was 14 years old. I had big problems when I was 19 years old. And I was able to stay it off until basically the spine started to collapse. And obviously then intervention had to be taken. Now, I always like to preface everything saying, just going through this doesn't make me an expert on spinal issues. I can give you some advice and so forth, but it doesn't make me an expert. I think the expertise part comes into the research I've done, the people that I've worked with that have basically given a good holistic perspective upon low back health. Now, the first thing I want to talk about is when people talk about low back pain, it can be really frustrating, because whenever you talk about any sort of pain, it could be on this giant spectrum. It could be, I woke up with a little tweak in my back, to I need to go to the emergency room right away. So I think we need to be a little bit more specific when we're talking about low back pain. If you're talking about people with acute low back pain, meaning it's been less than 3 months, 90% of stuff resolves itself within that time frame, just with a little rest, so, you know, maybe massage, stretching, possibly good strength training work. All that stuff can be resolved without major intervention. A lot of us, when we're talking about more serious low back issues, is when you're talking about chronic low back pain, which is longer than that 3 month period. And that can be split up in my mind into both what you can do from an exercise training perspective and what you need to know from a lifestyle perspective. Let's talk about lifestyle first. We can go through that rather quickly, because again, you need to start in small bits with people. So obviously, if someone's very overweight and has a low back pain, the easy idea would be like, well, you need to lose weight. But we know fear-based messaging doesn't work for people. And that person probably knows being overweight isn't good for them. So maybe trying to find some other goal, find some motivation for them to participate in some type of exercise program would be more beneficial than stating the obvious, which is if you took weight off your body, maybe you'd feel a little bit better. You know, there's a reason people tend to be overweight. It tends not to be something of just a lack of discipline. It's usually correlated to a lot of mental health issues, or, you know, emotional issues and so forth. So you need to find that right motivation for that individual. If they're not eating well, kind of a similar thing. We know inflammation can exacerbate pain. So if they're eating things that don't make, you know, that cause inflammation, processed foods, you know, just a lot of junk foods, a lot of emotional foods, alcohol, even, you know, you want to find strategies. You're not going to change their nutrition overnight. That's too overwhelming, especially someone who's dealing with chronic pain and maybe using food or alcohol as a pain management system. You want to go maybe a couple small changes. What are things that they can accept, they feel good that they can do, rather than trying to change everything too fast and overwhelm the individual. Sleep is another important one. Obviously, it'd be easy to tell people get more sleep, but as someone with chronic pain, I can tell you that, you know, sleeping can be a challenge. So it's finding strategies. Is there problem sleeping actually pain as they sleep? And maybe looking into certain sleep strategies as far as positioning of sleep, mattresses that they lay on, things of that nature. Look at their stress levels. When you're in chronic pain, your stress levels are always bit elevated. So you put on life stress on top of that, then you get to a higher level, and then people can have a hard time sleeping. So maybe looking at strategies of like, is there simple 5 to 10 minute meditation they can do before bed? Are there breathing exercises they can do to try to calm themselves down before bed, to put themselves in a good spot? Because a lot of people who have chronic pain of any sort, before going to bed, is actually kind of stressful, because they feel like they're just waiting for the pain to attack them, or the pain to wake them up, and the pain to make them miserable. So you want to find some strategies that sort of calms them down and allows them to be in a better state. If it's routine based, right? Like if they're on their phone or watching a lot of TV before bed, maybe deliberately taking a 30-minute break before bed, get into a routine where, you know, you're calming, you're getting away from those digital devices, you're setting a mood with a lower lighting, you know, finding the right temperature of the room. Any of these things are valuable strategies to try. But my moral here, especially with the lifestyle, is don't throw too much at people too fast. Look at their work life, right? If they're working, sitting in a lot of times, maybe you need to get them on a 30-minute clock where every 30 minutes they can get up, maybe just move around a little bit. Maybe they do a simple stretch or two. Don't give them too much again. You know, ask them about what's going on in their life. If they're very stressed at work, if they're very stressed at home, this is only going to elevate their level of pain. So maybe recommending seeing a therapist that can help them with some of those other aspects. It's not a negative because there's a huge correlation. It's about 80% of people with chronic pain also can be diagnosed for depression. So don't think these are two different things. They're definitely interrelated, and it's not inappropriate to educate people about this and make them feel like they're not, there's not something wrong with them. They're not bad because of these things are happening. There's a lot of complex interactions physiologically and emotionally that are going on. So you really want to do an inventory check on lifestyle. You can't do that and help people with low back pain. So if you're trying to help people with low back pain and you're not checking lifestyle, it's probably going to be an exercise in futility. And you know what? Pick one or two things at a time. You can educate slowly. You can have discussions as you build trust with your client. That's super important too, because the biggest fear people have that have chronic pain is you're going to put them in worse pain. Their life is already difficult as it is. Going to someone for exercise is a little bit stressful because they're afraid, because the reputation, unfortunately, of the fitness industry is you're going to make it worse. And that's even more overwhelming to people. So we as professionals have to appreciate and look through their eyes of what they're feeling and seeing when they come to us. And that's why there's a lot of trepidation when people come to us and they admit that they have chronic pain and they're looking for solutions. Now, from an exercise standpoint, because I know that's what a lot of you guys are interested in, is trying to go over some common myths. So usually the biggest myths I hear about low back pain are you need to stretch more, you need to get better spinal mobility, and you need better back strength. None of those things are true. I mean, let's take stretching, for example. Stretching at times can make people feel better. So, you know, if you have someone who doesn't have chronic low back pain or things like that, stretch, you know, maybe it's acute, maybe they're just being preventive, stretching can help, right? It can help just keep your, you know, mobility and tissue health. That's fine. But when you're talking about people with low back pain, especially things like hamstrings, you can actually be causing issues with the nerves. So while someone feels good while they're doing the stretch, they find later on that their pain actually increases. That could be caused to some nerve irritation you're causing during the stretch. So you want to be really cautious with the type of stretching if you're doing stretching at all with people that have chronic low back pain. That doesn't mean you can't do anything, but positioning, the volume of work that you do, and what stretches you choose are very important. There's no problem probably doing some simple hip flexor stretches, but at the same time, you want to make sure they don't go into lumbar extension. There's no compensation through the lumbar spine, because that's going to just exasperate things again. You might want to hold off on some hamstring stretches because there's a lot of nerve irritation often. You might be able to do some light gluteal stretches. Now, whenever you're doing any type of stretch, though, especially with people with chronic low back pain, you want to make sure you're staying out of the position of great discomfort. What do I mean by great discomfort? Where they're wincing, where they're like that, where they look like great discomfort. And because discomfort is relative to the individual, you want to always guide people. So you could give people a simple scale, like one is no problem, two, some discomfort, three is pain or great discomfort. You can ask them where they're at in the stretch. If they reach a three, that's no go. Right? They can maybe be at a two, but a three, it means we need to back off a little bit because their nervous system is going to kick in and make things worse. All right. So be very aware of how stretching can be an issue with people with chronic low back pain if you don't know what you're stretching, how much you're stretching, and how intensely you're stretching. So I'd usually only pick maybe a couple of drills, two to three, put them in positions where they can be very comfortable going into the stretch. Work on breathing techniques to take off some of the tension in the brake systems. You can use some contract relax methods where you push for about, you know, 6 seconds, you know, breathe and sort of go into increased stretch. But don't look for these extremes with people, because it may not be possible nor actually beneficial for people to try to get these huge levels of flexibility in their stretching. With that, let's talk about spinal mobility, because that's another big one, right? It makes sense in people's heads. Well, you have a low back injury, it's because your low back doesn't move well. Now, whenever people talk about spinal mobility, I wish they would do a much better job of being specific upon where in the spine they're talking about, because we have three different and distinct sections. We have our cervical, we have our thoracic, and we have our lumbar. When I'm talking about low back pain, obviously I'm talking more about the lumbar area. Your thoracic spine can have mobility and your cervical spine should have mobility. Your lumbar spine doesn't have a ton of mobility to it to begin with. So to give the idea that lumbar spine needs, you know, the reason for low back pain is not enough spinal mobility doesn't make a lot of sense when you look at the structure. Typically, the lumbar spine is dependent upon what's happening below the chain and what's happening above the chain. More so what's happening below the chain, I would say. There are some elements of the cervical and thoracic spine that can definitely influence the lumbar spine, but I find in most people it's what's happening below in their hips, the lower leg, and the foot, right? That goes up that kinetic chain and can greatly impact your lumbar spine. So we know things like hip mobility is a good thing, but whenever I do hip mobility, I always try to integrate some, you know, footwork, meaning having the foot integrated, because the foot and the hip are reliant upon one another. You can obviously use some things like pigeon pose type work and other shin boxes. Those are fine, but I'd really try to get people with a low back pain to learn to use the foot to create stability while they get mobility in the hip. That's totally appropriate. You can do thoracic spine work, but usually what's happening, why the thoracic spine locks up with people with low back pain, is that they have instability in the lumbar area. And we know that basically our body follows a relative alternating pattern of stability and mobility, meaning my foot creates dominance of stability, ankle dominance of mobility, knee dominance of stability, hip dominance of mobility, blah, 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 up the chain, where lumbar is stability and thoracic spine is mobility. So if my lumbar spine is not offering that stability, neurologically, my body goes to reduce the range of motion of my body and will give that reduced range of motion and find stability by not allowing a lot of movement in my thoracic spine. So that's why a lot of times you see us do thoracic spine mobility work, where we're doing a lot of core stability work, because research has shown that has a very positive influence on both hip and thoracic mobility. So again, sitting there trying to, you know, do lots of lumbar stability work, trying to do a lot of loaded lumbar flexion, like, I don't know why people are doing that. That only increases the risk of injury, and it has no correlation to low back health, right? So again, there's no evidence that actually is even beneficial. And so again, you got to question why people are doing what they're doing, other than, oh, we have this mentality, if something hurts, it just needs to move more. That's not the case, especially if you understand the structure that you're dealing with. Can the lumbar spine have mobility? Yes. Will it have great amounts of mobility? Probably not, especially people that have chronic back pain, if they also have structural differences, right? So let me quickly tap on that. So there's a lot of people running around going, you're not your imaging, because there's been studies that shown that people with changes in their spine are not symptomatic of back pain. Now, what people fail to extrapolate from that information is this is a study. I mean, they purposefully find people that do not have low back pain. Now, they aren't finding people that have low back pain and also don't have much changes in their imaging. Does it make sense? I can tell you from experience, it's very difficult with the insurance we have here in the U.S. to get even simple imaging done sometimes. So it's not like people off the street are going to go get an MRI. So usually what doctors will do, if it's a good doctor especially, is they'll try to correlate the pain that you're exhibiting, the movement that you're exhibiting, and what's happening on your imaging. And so if we know a lot of people, as we get older, especially over the age of 30 and 35, have changes in their spine, and we have people that have low back pain that have these changes, the last thing we want to do is put them under these extreme conditions of loaded flexion, loaded extension, loaded rotation of the lumbar spine to somehow magically solve low back pain, because these structures are already compromised. So we have to be even more mindful of what we ask people to do with their bodies. All right. Hopefully that makes a lot of sense, because that's really important and it drives me insane when people talk about this. So what about from an exercise perspective? A lot of it is going to be Tolerance and capacity. Got this from Dr. Stuart McGill, who's one of the leading experts in spine research. He's been researching spinal health mechanics for over 30 years. So I'm not saying he knows everything, but he knows a lot of stuff that's very beneficial. So what's tolerance capacity? Tolerance is what can you do basically with little to no discomfort, right? We always try to avoid pain. And again, pain is relative. So you might think someone's babying something, but if they perceive that as painful, you got to find a different thing to do. Because once people identify pain in their nervous system, they're going to move differently and they're not going to move better. So tolerance can be, you know, reducing the range of motion in a movement. It could put people in a more stable environment. So let's give it two examples. So instead of making someone do a full squat, maybe you have them do a very shortened range of motion squat. Instead of having them do a deadlift from the ground, you have them do a deadlift from an elevated platform, all right? A more stable environment, meaning we're doing it bilaterally. We're really emphasizing things like pulling the handles apart in an ultimate sandbag. Maybe it's putting people on a table. Tables are a great investment if you have a lot of clients with low back pain, because getting up and down from the ground is really difficult for a lot of people with low back pain. Getting to a table is a lot more accessible, especially if you're going to do a lot of ground-based work like bridges, planks, and so forth. That's a worthy investment, trust me. So you get people on, let's say, a table, so they're in a more stable environment, they can do more ground-based work. And with that said, people also misunderstand the gluteal influence here. So when we talk about gluteal amnesia, we're not talking about strength of the glutes. I wish people would understand that. The idea of gluteal amnesia came again from Dr. McGill, was talking about the wrong patterning of the glutes. Meaning typically if I was going to do hip extension, you would see a pattern of my hamstrings fire, my glutes fire, and then getting some firing from my lumbar spine. Now, what often happens with people with gluteal amnesia is they'll go hamstring, lumbar spine, maybe a little glute. Right? So it's not turning on at the right time. So this is more of a motor control issue. This is what hip bridges, or if you like to say the thrust, which I hate, were really designed for, was to reestablish the coordination of the posterior chain, not to just strengthen your glutes or to bodybuild your glutes. So what we want to do is probably put people in a more bent knee position. So they found that when people have a knee angle of about 135 degrees of knee flexion, which is compared to 90 degrees of knee flexion, they got more gluteal activity, which makes sense because when you bend the knees more, you shorten your hamstrings and your hamstrings can't contribute as much. When you do hip bridges, you're going to have to probably find the correct stance for people, I mean the width of stance, that can be variable upon a lot of people. But also the reason that we do hip bridges differently in DBRT, which is like, you know, holding a ultimate sandbag above our chest, I'll give you guys some examples, is because to prevent movement on the lumbar spine dominating the exercise. Because again, if we try to use our lumbar spine instead of our glutes, we'll go into lumbar extension, which can accentuate issues. When we create that stability through my spine, it's basically a plank where I lock in my core. I can't really lead with my lumbar spine. And then we want to cue important things like pushing through your feet. We know in deadlifting, for example, the cue is to push through your feet and stand tall. But yet when we do hip bridges, people say, lift up your hips and squeeze your glutes. Doesn't make any sense. We don't do that deadlifts. We don't say push through your feet and squeeze your glutes. By pushing through your feet, that will extend your hips and automatically get your glutes to engage. So we want a stable core, and then we want to get a dynamic lower body by the action we commit through our feet. Now, with that said, a lot of people think the issue with, you know, training is that people have a weak low back. That's not the case. Research shows that what people have a tendency to do when they have chronic low back pain is use their low back more than they do their hips. So it's a patterning issue. This is why we go back to movement patterns, is if you teach people to default to using their hips while keeping a relatively stable trunk, they're going to be less prone to having problems. In fact, it's core endurance that's more correlated to low back health than core strength. So again, time and time again, research shows even in athletes, lumbar strength is not correlated to a prevention of low back health as much as proper coordination of the core and core endurance. So doing things like being able to do high rep deadlifts is something I like to do when people are relatively healthier. They can do things like, you know, bent over rows. That's why bent over rows is such a focus in our program, because you need to own that position for a period of time without compensatory movement. That's why we put people in different environments where they have to maintain a stable trunk as they perform different movements. Like I say, in shucking, where we sort of shift our hips back and forth in a deadlift posture. Those are all examples. Marches are good examples. Our bird dogs are good examples of doing core endurance work that's going to repattern your body to work more efficiently. I'll provide some examples in this post. But again, the science says it's not a strength issue. So stop doing strength work to fix a motor control and a core endurance issue. Now, once you get people, again, doing good baseline work, meaning if you can do bird dogs without pain, you can do dead bugs without pain, you can do foundational squatting and hip hinging without pain, then we can slowly add progression from there. We can do things like changing the load position. We can change the body position in very incremental ways, like using our sprinter stance. We can change the type of tools we use to add more reactive core training, because at first, when people have pain, they need tons of feedback, tons. And that's where a lot of the ways we use the ultimate sandbag, it becomes so important. That's why our press outs are so important. That's why our lifts and chops are so important. That's why how we grip and create tension is so important, because of the feedback it creates upon the body. So I'm not going to make this too much longer. The keys are: be careful of the stretches you use, the volume of stretches you use, and the intensity of stretches you use. Be aware in mobility that you need to work on foot and lower leg stability, hip mobility, not really lumbar mobility. And then with your strength training, you want to build up core endurance. You want to make sure you have good motor control and coordination by how well you're doing a lot of these movements. Meaning, if you're doing, let's say, a bird dog, and you're externally rotating the foot, you're twisting the hips, you're shifting your hips, you're collapsing the shoulder, obviously that's not good coordination of the body. If you're shooting the leg out before you drag the weight, you're not timing them together, that's not good coordination of the movement. You want to see in a deadlift that it's smooth, that there's not increased pain or discomfort with the movement. You may start on an elevated platform and slowly decrease the height of the platform that they're using. So there's this tons of easy, great strategies. I'll give you guys some ideas, but you have to understand what's going on with the issue so you can create a proper solution. If people are telling you you need to stretch more, you need more lumbar mobility, you need more lumbar strength, get away from them. They're not giving you science-based, well-researched work on this topic. And what I want you to do is be able to make the impact upon people. I know you want to, but you need to understand what is occurring and why it's happening. If you guys have any questions, drop us an email, info@ultimatesandbagtraining.com, or jump on our DVRT fitness group on Facebook and ask any question you want. We're happy to answer them and provide you more content so that you can help people live better lives. Till next time.